This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
84% either women who face a high risk of gender-based violence or children, half of whom have reportedly been subjected to physical violence and abuse.
That was UNHCR spokesman Babar Balok on how 1.2 million people have been forced to flee their homes in Burkina Faso since 2019. Details coming up. Also, despite claims that Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau is dead, the U.S. has yet to confirm the claim. And Uganda has reimposed a partial lockdown as COVID-19 cases surge. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The UN Refugee Agency says survivors of the Saturday massacre in a Burkina Faso village are in desperate need of humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Unidentified gunmen attacked the village of Sohal in Burkina Faso's northeast Sahel region on June 5th. They reportedly stormed the village in the middle of the night, executing at least 138 civilians, seriously injuring nearly 40 other people, and setting houses and a market ablaze. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 3,300 people have fled for their lives to nearby villages. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balouch says the newly displaced, mostly children and women, have been arriving in desperate straits. He says they have few or no belongings and need everything.
The new arrivals urgently need water and sanitation, shelter essentials, aid items, and medical care. Authorities have delivered almost 400 tons of food and thousands of relief items, while UNHCR and partners are providing medical care and psychosocial support.
The attack, the deadliest since 2015, highlights the increasing insecurity and violence that has been gaining a foothold in Africa's Sahel region over the past few years. The UNHCR calls Burkina Faso the fastest-growing displacement and protection crisis in the world. Since 2019, the agency says violence in the country has forced more than 1.2 million people to flee their homes. Balouch says so far this year, violence has displaced some 150,000.
84% either women who face a high risk of gender-based violence or children, half of whom have reportedly been subjected to physical violence and abuse. In addition to the IDPs, Burkina Faso continues to generously host more than 22,000 refugees and asylum seekers, mostly from Mali.
The UNHCR is appealing for more generous support from the international community. It says the available funds cannot keep pace with the growing humanitarian needs in the hugely insecure Sahelian region. It notes only a quarter of the nearly $260 million required to assist Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger this year has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Despite recent claims that Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau is dead, the United States has yet to confirm that claim by Islamic State West Africa province. VOA national security correspondent Dave Selden explains why.
U.S. counterterrorism and intelligence officials have been very, very careful in how they approach the reports, which first began coming out last month that Abubakar Shekau, the leader of Boko Haram, had been killed. Shekau has been reported dead four or five times before this, and in each case has come back to life. This time, though, there is a sense within the U.S. counterterrorism community that perhaps these reports are more credible, and perhaps things are indicating that Shekau really is dead. Now, a senior administration official tells me they've not been able to independently verify the reports of his death. They are taking seriously, though, the audio recordings of Islamic State West Africa, the group that has been competing with Boko Haram in Nigeria and in surrounding areas. And in that audio that was put out by a local news organization called HumAngle, and a recording also obtained by the Reuters news agency. It has someone who apparently appears to be the leader of Islamic State West Africa saying that Shekau was killed. And according to the report from HumAngle, it says that he was killed and that Boko Haram targeted him at the direction of Islamic State leadership in Iraq and Syria. And so, again, the U.S. remains highly cautious about these reports, but it seems, based on the reaction of senior officials, that it is looking more plausible that perhaps this time Boko Haram's leader, Abu Bakr Shekau, really is dead.
Uganda's government has reimposed a partial lockdown as COVID-19 cases surge in what has been described as a second wave. The measure includes closing all educational institutions and banning communal prayers. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Parents have been rushing to pick their children after President Yoweri Museveni went on television to order schools closure effective this morning.
There is an increasing number of clusters of infections in schools since March 2021 when we opened the schools. Last year, I sent home 15 million children, and when those children were in the villages, I didn't hear of any infection.
948 COVID cases have been reported, spread among 43 learning institutions in Uganda. The closure of schools comes only days after some learners had just returned to class. Parents are worried about the fate of the school dues they just paid. Enos Kagodo is one such parent.
Call upon school administrations, let this be ministry, whereby when a chance comes to open the schools, there will be no chance to ask more money as school fees.
All teachers have been ordered to get vaccinated before the schools reopen. Museveni also ordered the closure of places of worship, limited public gatherings to maximum 20 people, and suspended public transport effective Thursday.
Exemption for inter-district travel and movement of vehicles are cargo trucks. Cargo trucks, the trucks which carry food, which carry cargo, those should move. Registered tourist vehicles, essential and emergency services vehicles, also should move.
Unlike in the past, violators of measures were sent to prison. This time, they face fines.
So instead of arresting people and filling jails and wasting our time, this time the Secretary for Treasury is going to issue such an instrument, and he will issue security-controlled receipt books. When you violate, they give you a default ticket and you're going to pay in the bank.
He warns that if the restrictions aren't obeyed, he'll be forced to put the country under total lockdown. Shopping malls and supermarkets have been allowed to continue operating for 1 week under strict surveillance. Failure to follow the rules could mean closure. The religious leaders have already asked the faithful to pray from their homes. Public health experts, however, warn that the new measures might not be effective without messages geared toward change of perception on the spread of COVID. Dr. Joseph Matovu is a behavioral change scientist.
In such circumstances, you do what is called risk communication. You have to ensure that you develop messages that will help people to see that there is a health risk and how to avoid that risk.
Uganda has registered a total of 52,929 COVID cases with 374 deaths. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Mali's interim president, Assimi Goïta, yesterday named opposition leader and former minister Tchouguéli Maïga as prime minister of the transitional government. As he was formally sworn in, Goïta, the Malian colonel who has overthrown two presidents in the past 9 months, said he would oversee a transition towards democratic elections. Within hours, he had appointed Maïga as prime minister. It was not immediately clear to what extent Maiga's appointment would satisfy calls from Mali's neighbors and military allies like France and the United States for a civilian-led government. South Africa's health minister, who has been implicated in corruption, is expected to appear before the ruling African National Congress's, or ANC's, Integrity Commission on Friday. Zeweli Mkhize will answer allegations that he awarded multi-million dollar contracts for COVID communication campaigns to friends and received kickbacks in return. Darren Taylor reports.
Some newspapers are reporting that the minister plans to resign, others that he's preparing to fight attempts to force him out of office. The contradicting narratives show how the scandal around Mkhize is dividing public opinion. Some say he must go, at least until an investigation clears his conduct. Others say he must stay because he's a good health minister who's been steering the country through the COVID-19 pandemic. Political analyst Lesiba Tefo says it doesn't matter how good or bad someone is at their job. If they've stolen public money, they must be fired.
The minister would have made life far easier for the president had he stepped aside or stepped down. They are comrades and fairly close. Just to say, big brother, let me not complicate my life. Let me fall on my sword.
Tefo says the scandals put President Cyril Ramaphosa in a difficult position. In late 2017, Mkhize withdrew from his own campaign for leadership of the ANC and backed Ramaphosa. It was a move that condemned then-President Jacob Zuma to defeat. Ramaphosa became ANC leader, then secured the presidency of South Africa. Professor Tefo notes Mkhize's been spending a lot of time recently in his home province, KwaZulu-Natal.
Typical of Africans along ethnic extraction. He was in Natal trying to canvass and rally support. What does it tell you? He's digging his heels. That tells you no permanent friends, no permanent enemies in politics. As things stand right now, he probably would prefer to be pushed out and strengthen possibly the other faction that is likely to embrace him.
The chairperson of the Democratic Alliance Party's Federal Council, Helen Ziller, points out that Mkhize admitted that lucrative contracts went to ANC comrades. Allegations that remain to be investigated, she says, are that the minister made sure his friends won the tenders and in turn they rewarded him.
Now that is a very, very serious set of allegations, and South Africa deserves to know whether that is true. And we need to know whether there's evidence to lay a charge, whether the minister will plead, and whether he will be found guilty in a court of law. We know that these processes take a very, very long time. We know that Jacob Zuma is...
But for now, Mkhize's fate rests with his own party's Integrity Commission, a scenario the leader of the One South Africa movement, Musi Maimane, describes as supremely ridiculous.
It is extraordinarily bizarre that we have a minister who says he must appear before the ANC's Integrity Commission. On what basis? This is not the ANC's contract that was issued. This is the state contract. The sooner we learn the power of being able to build a capable bureaucracy, have leaders who are elected directly from communities and are accountable to citizens, then and only then can we sit back and say we set aside all political interference into this matter.
So, will the ruling party's own oversight body order Mkhize to resign? Don't hold your breath, says Tefo.
In China, a corrupt politician gets killed. In Europe, a corrupt politician gets arrested. In Africa, a corrupt politician gets elevated to a higher office.
It's alleged that gifts bestowed on Mkhize after he ensured that contracts went to pals, included home renovations. If the minister's detractors have their way, he'll soon have a lot of time to enjoy those while on suspension, followed by time in jail. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Saying the United States is deeply concerned by the continued violence in Cameroon's Anglophone region, Secretary of State Antony Blinken is urging the Cameroonian government and armed separatists to end violence and engage in a dialogue without preconditions. According to a Reuters report, Cameroon's two western Anglophone regions have been gripped by fighting since 2017 as the rebels try to break away from the predominantly Francophone government. More than 3,500 people have died and some 700,000 have been displaced in the violence. Stepping up pressure for a peaceful resolution to Cameroon's conflict, Blinken announced yesterday the imposition of visa restrictions on unspecified individuals believed to be undermining efforts to end the crisis. This decision, he said, reflects U.S. commitment to advance a dialogue to resolve the crisis and support respect for human rights. Clergy in Cameroon have appealed to both sides in the country's separatist conflict to stop abducting and harassing priests. Within the past 2 weeks, 6 Roman Catholic priests and missionaries were abducted and a church attacked, leaving at least 2 dead and 11 wounded. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The Roman Catholic Church in Cameroon says its priests and missionaries are suffering assaults, abductions and torture in the country's separatist conflict. A church press release Tuesday says Cameroon's military took Reverend Father Sylvester Ngarbansa from Vekovi, a northwestern village, on June 4 and have yet to release him. The church says the military accused Nsa of cooperating with separatists, which the church denies. Reverend Father Humphrey Tatambui is Director of Communications at the National Episcopal Conference of Cameroon's Catholic Bishops. He says rebels also abducted Nsa 3 months ago and accused him of collaborating with the military before releasing him.
The church preaches peace. The church teaches that you cannot have peace without justice and without the truth. The church must keep on insisting on that justice and truth in and out of season. And when the church will speak the truth, often it doesn't sit well with one or the other side. Many parishes have been closed or they are not operating as they should.
Mbui says at least 6 priests and missionaries were tortured by the military or rebels within the past 2 weeks and had to be treated at hospitals. Reverend Father Christopher Eboka is the cathedral administrator of Mamfi, a town in the Anglophone Southwest. He says rebels abducted him on May 22 and freed him only after 10 days in captivity.
The church has been caught up in between the separatist fighters on the one hand and the Cameroon military on the other hand. The threat on the lives of priests, the attack on priests should be stopped. On Sunday, the 6th of June, priests gathered at the pastoral center celebrating the anniversary of one of them were attacked by unknown gunmen who came in search of a priest.
The church said one person died in the attack. A second died in the hospital, and 11 others were treated for injuries. The Episcopal Conference of Cameroon's bishops this month called on separatists to stop targeting and harassing local clergy. Rebels on social media claimed government troops organized the attacks on churches to give the rebels a bad image, an often repeated claim which the military denies. Cameroon's military on state radio confirmed the rebel attacks on the church and past abductions, but did not mention taking any priest into military custody. Cameroon's government says civilians suspected of collaborating with rebels are placed under investigation, but a spokesperson would not say how many priests or missionaries have been arrested. A March Human Rights Watch report says both military and rebel abuses are increasing in Cameroon's western regions. The UN says Cameroon's separatist conflict has left more than 3,000 people dead since 2016 and 750,000 internally displaced or to neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé. Cameroon.
With HIV/AIDS accounting for half of all deaths among adolescents, an advocacy group is pushing up for Parliament to drop the minimum wage for accessing sexual and reproductive health care services from 18 to 21. Arigando gives us more on the story.
In a report to a parliamentary portfolio committee, the advocacy core team said lack of adequate information and knowledge about reproductive health care services exacerbates the spread of HIV and sexually transmitted infections, illegal abortions, and unplanned parenthood among youths. The organization wants adolescents to be able to access HIV testing, pre- and post-counseling, access to contraceptives, and other pregnancy prevention management services. The Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Health and Child Care recommended that the Health Ministry incorporate the lower age limit and provide for the protection of service providers by June next year. The National AIDS Council says a number of issues are behind the adolescent mortality rates, such as treatment defaults, lack of family support systems, fatigue with taking drugs, and even lack of transport money. Senator Nyati, the council's regional manager for Bulawayo, weighs in.
The viral load increases and they end up dying of AIDS. The other thing is that sexual reproductive health services are inaccessible for young people because of many reasons. Some of the reasons are the user fees. When you go to the local authority clinics, they expect you to pay registration for whatever service you want inside. So whether you want condoms or you want your resupply of your drugs, you have to pay before you enter.
Nyati says substance and alcohol abuse are part of the plethora of challenges young people face.
The environment in Zimbabwe is not that supportive as far as young people is concerned because of the economic challenges that they face. Some of them, they are educated, but they cannot get employment. Some of them, they are doing business, and the business is low due to COVID and HIV. So you find that young people have got a lot of challenges. Some also end up committing suicide besides the sexual reproductive health issues. So we need to increase counseling services for young people.
A recent national survey puts infection rates among adolescents 2.1% for males and 3.8% for females ages 15 to 19 years. The higher risk rates for girls reflects intergenerational sexual liaisons and sexual abuse within a largely patriarchal society. HIV/AIDS awareness advocate Taurai Nyandoro, who was with the Zimbabwe AIDS Network, weighs in.
In as much as our incidence, you know, rate is going down in Zimbabwe, but it remains, you know, disproportionately very high amongst adolescents, you know, especially young girls. So we need to close that gap, eh? And one way of closing that gap is to ensure access to, you know, quality, comprehensive, you know, sexual and reproductive health services, you know, amongst, you know, these age groups here. So it is important. When I mean access, you know, we also need to ensure that, you know, access is prolonged. We don't experience, you know, stockouts or any shortages at some point.
The government has admitted to Parliament that poverty is the primary cause of premature sexual activity among young people. Analysts say the government needs to fix the economy, which has become the trigger for a wide range of challenges facing Zimbabweans. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international